Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, more warnings about cosmetic surgery overseas as six people in 2 years die following complications. The BBC's Orla Gearan will bring us the very latest from Istanbul on Turkey's historic elections. Larry Murphy's brother confronted him about Ireland's missing women. Reporter Mick Pilo tells us about his documentary examining the disappearance and murder of women in the 1990s. Could you reduce your waist by 1%? Evelyn O'Rourke reports. Wearing the colours that suit you? We'll find out how knowing what shades work can change how you look and how you feel. And Dr. David Coleman answers your parenting questions. You can email us todaycb@rte.ie or text us 51551. First this morning, there was widespread condemnation over the weekend when a makeshift camp for homeless asylum seekers on Sandwith Street in Dublin's South Inner City became the focus of an anti-immigration protest. Videos were circulated online showing the camp in flames after furniture and wooden pallets were set alight. Well, speaking on Morning Ireland this morning, the Minister for Integration, Roderic O'Gorman, said there were 480 people who had not been offered accommodation over the weekend, but that a significant number of this group will be offered accommodation over the next week. Well, for more on this, I'm joined on the line first by Jack Power, news reporter at the Irish Times. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Claire.
So take us back and explain exactly what happened over the weekend at this camp.
Yeah, so on Thursday and Friday, there were several kind of, I suppose this camp became the focus of anti-immigration protests and demonstrations. And on Friday evening, there was a significant anti-immigration protest kind of targeting the camp. And then there was a parallel demonstration of, you know, kind of pro-immigration or pro-refugee demonstrators who turned up as well, with Gardaí separating both groups. And sometime after that situation kind of dissipated, videos circulating online showed a number of men kind of dismantling this makeshift camp where around kind of 10 or so homeless asylum seekers had been sleeping for around a fortnight. And then videos later showed the camp up in flames. So on Saturday morning, I went out to it, you know, and at that stage it was abandoned. And, you know, you could, you know, kind of walk in among the kind of burnt debris of kind of mattresses and sofas. You kind of just see, I suppose, remnants of, you know, the camp in terms of books, you know, kind of toothbrushes, suitcases, you know, kind of cooking equipment and tins of food and stuff like that, mm-hmm. Sleeping bags and tents kind of strewn about.
So you were there on Saturday, and on Saturday there were more protests about 5 minutes walk from that Sandwith Street location, and some scuffles broke out, Jack.
Yeah, so 5 minutes from the Sandwith Street site, there's a much larger camp of around, I counted 50 tents, which are pitched along kind of Mount Street and down Grattan Court, which is beside the International Protection Office, which is the state agency of the Department of Integration, which processes asylum applications. So that kind of camp has been there for a number of weeks as this issue of the state being unable to offer shelter to asylum seekers has gotten worse over recent months. And it's kind of grown significantly, you know, kind of one tent, you know, being pitched beside the next and the next. And then, yeah, as you said, on Saturday, a group of anti-immigration protesters walking past it, you know, were effectively kind of shouting at people there and people in tents, and Gardaí were responding to that as well, I understand. Mm-hmm. And then had a presence there you know, kind of afterwards, I was kind of speaking to some of the men who were who'd kind of come, you know, as recently as a week ago or so into the country, and then found themselves sleeping rough. You know, there was some sense of kind of concern for their safety. You know, they're obviously in an incredibly vulnerable position, you know, out on the street, and you know, kind of quite exposed. And I suppose in terms of the Mount Street site by the IPO offices there, you know, they I suppose anti-immigration protesters clearly know that they're there, if that makes sense. So they're kind of quite visible, and their location is quite known.
It was striking, though, that one of them said to you he felt safer there than he did where he came from.
Yeah, so I suppose that just kind of highlights, and I suppose the Irish Refugee Council would have kind of said much the same in terms of, I was speaking to Nick Henderson there and the people they're dealing with, you know, that in a lot of cases, some of these cases, people are fleeing kind of war and persecution, and even in the situation, sleeping in a tent in Dublin is better than where they came from.
Mm-hmm. And just remind us then what Roderick O'Gorman said this morning about what's likely to happen. Did he put a figure on the number of beds he expects to come into use this week?
Yes, yeah, so this kind of stems also from a High Court challenge that was taken against the department over the failure of the state to provide shelter and accommodation to asylum seekers. So the department and officials have really been kind of scrambling kind of since then in the last week and a half or so and kind of past that to source and bring on additional accommodation. So we understand that there's kind of plans in the coming days to open a number of other kind of accommodation centres. And I think the hope is that they will provide a good deal of accommodation to try and cater for these 420 or 480 people that at the moment have been left without accommodation, and many of those are sleeping rough in tents.
Jack, thank you very much. That's Jack Power there from the Irish Times. And I'm joined now by Brendan O'Connor, who's president of the Garda Representative Association. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Claire.
I see reports this morning that there's growing unease within the Gardaí around the policing of these anti-immigration protests. Some members are reportedly unhappy that a more proactive approach hasn't been taken. What's your own stance on this? Should Gardaí be taking a stronger stance when these protests or these incidents that we saw over the last few days are happening?
Well, I suppose, Claire, where we come from, the situation is from the perspective of the level of preparedness and the level of resources available. So what we're seeing is, of course, reactive policing, and we're reacting to these situations as they arise whenever it's obvious that there is a problem and ongoing issues. So certainly we would feel that it's putting an additional stress and strain on our members. So it's well documented that actually Garda numbers are falling. The city centre, we're struggling to keep beats out and patrols to keep the ordinary day-to-day policing in place, and we see just another burden placed on our members. So we see just we need to see more better planning and more resourcing and better preparedness for these. But it is very difficult for management, and fairness, these situations can arise. But it's again indicative of a lack of preparedness through, you know, years of underinvestment and undertraining that the guards are trying, crisis management and fire brigade policing, which is what demanded that we repeat repeatedly.
Jack was just reminding us there about the fact that those tents were burned down, that property was attacked and destroyed in that makeshift camp. What is the role of the Gardaí in that case, Brendan? Do you have a role in protecting property as well as people?
Well, the fundamental role of a member from Garda Síochána is to protect life and property. That's our oath, and that's what we're duty-bound to do. So, you know, it's property, it belongs to, and every person is equal in the eyes of the law. So the victim of crime, it doesn't matter what your residential or immigration status, our members are duty-bound to investigate that as a crime, and we will investigate it. But again, it's an additional file, it's an additional workload for already struggling members in the city centre. So, but certainly it's just our function is there to protect any human being, any citizen who comes under attack as a victim of a crime.
So let's say there was a copycat attack and Gardaí were present when people tried to set fire to tents and to property. Gardaí are duty bound to intervene there and stop that from happening.
Absolutely, we have a duty to prevent a crime taking place if we witness it, and when a crime is reported to us, we have a duty to investigate. So certainly that is no different from any other crime regardless of the circumstance.
And are Gardaí all trained to deal with these types of incidents?
Well, I suppose this is, again, one of the problems that we have with specialisation is that all guards used to receive public order training as part of their foundation training, but now as we move towards specialisation, it's a public order unit that would be more suitable to police such events. And, of course, it takes time to scramble and to assemble a public order unit and put it in place. So certainly, I suppose, it exposes some of the weaknesses in training that we would see. And, again, these situations can arise anywhere in any town or village in the country where there is a problem like this. So, again, we see a lack of training, a lack of preparedness. But policing is all about being prepared for the unexpected and whatever eventuality. We would say policing in this country has been denied resources and we don't have that capacity. So it's very much individuals and small groups of members under pressure trying to contain situations as they arise.
So should every Garda then have public order training?
Well, I suppose every guard should be, like, we should be aware of the changing situation in relation to immigration and migration. What are the challenges of policing? Our members need to be informed better what they can expect and what they should adhere to. But again, it's sort of the overall attitude to policing, whereas guards are really being told, here's a new situation, go out and try your best. It's not good enough. We need consistent and regular training for members for every eventuality. We're the police, we're the people that people turn to in times of uncertainty, in times of need, and we need to have that level of preparedness, and that only comes from resourcing and training, as we have repeatedly said, is absent and seems to be underway.
Well, according to reports in the Irish Times, Garda, the sources are concerned about copycat attacks, that is going to happen, very likely to happen. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think that's just a phenomenon of society today, that we do see the sharing of images on social media often of unruliness or public disorder, and there is always a danger that other elements which are intent on causing havoc will replicate it. So certainly it is a risk that needs to be assessed, and again, we need that level of preparedness for it when it does arise.
Okay, Brendan, thank you for joining us. Brendan O'Connor, President of the Garda Representative Association. I'm also joined by Fiona Hurley, CEO of NASC, the Migrant and Refugee Rights Centre. Fiona, thank you for being with us this morning. What are your concerns then, given what we saw over the weekend?
The arson attack was clearly apparent, and it really highlights firstly how worrying it is that the situation has escalated this far and how dangerous the situation is for those who are now left homeless. I think it's horrific that people who've been left homeless and destitute, having fled their home countries for safety, are being targeted for intimidation and threats of violence. And I think it's really concerning that we're now looking at the risk of copycat attacks around the country.
Do you lay the blame at the door of the government?
Well, the government does have a legal obligation to provide accommodation, and they have not met that legal obligation. So while we welcome the comments of the minister this morning, the further accommodation will be stepped up in the coming weeks. The reality is that homeless services and the incredible volunteer organisations working in the city centre haven't been properly resourced to cope with the additional demand.
And we see reports over the weekend and again today in the Examiner about government plans or considerations that they might use these flotels. They're currently being used in Dorset in England, where you would have a ship or a vessel used to accommodate refugees. Is that appropriate and necessary, do you think?
We simply don't think that copying the UK is a good idea. We believe that people should be provided with proper accommodation. You know, we are 2 years on from the white paper on ending direct provision, and at that point we were talking about ending direct provision and ending emergency accommodation. The government needs to address the need for resources and for creating long-term resources. The reality is that, you know, there are conflicts that are happening around the world, that there will be a sustained number of people coming to Ireland to claim asylum, as there has been across the world, and we need to build long-term resources.
Mm-hmm. But in the short term, Fiona, anything is better than being in a tent in Dublin city centre or any street in Ireland.
Yeah, it is worrying that we then go, okay, well what is the lowest common denominator here? Are we then saying the tents are okay? Or that some of the tented accommodation beside direct provision centres is okay? So short-term emergency accommodation is one thing, but we need to make sure that the short-term emergency accommodation doesn't become long-term. You know, we saw in 2018 that the government started using hotels and called it emergency accommodation and said it would be available, used for a matter of months. And, you know, a lot of those places are still there, and we haven't developed better resources since then. In fact, the situation has gotten worse.
Mm-hmm. The government said this morning, the Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman, said that emergency accommodation for most of the almost 500 people who are currently without a place to live will be provided in the coming days. Are you reassured by that?
It is reassuring. We would hope that the government is able to accommodate all 480 people, as is their legal obligation. We do see that there's a need to ensure safety for people in the meantime. You know, the attacks have raised serious considerations about the safety of people who are in those tents outside the International Protection Office. Mm-hmm. And we hope that the Gardaí are able to ensure their safety until such time as they are accommodated.
Fiona, thank you for joining us. Fiona Hurley there from the Migrant and Refugee Rights Centre. The Irish Times yesterday apologised for publishing an article on its website, which it now admits was a hoax. We're going to take a closer look at what happened next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.